Today's guest is my friend, Dr. Spencer Murray. Spencer is an educator and minister with over 25 years of teaching experience in Detroit. Spencer is committed to working with men in his mission to identify the cultural elements of toxic masculinity and offer healing alternatives to create an environment that is demonstrated by a healthy respect for women and a reverence for the feminine energy throughout the world. He lives in Atlanta, Georgia with his wife, Erica. And he and I actually share the same birthday. So he's kind of like a brother from another mother. Enjoy.
So strong man, as I learned it growing up, one who was strong physically, one who was could suck it up and man up without being vulnerable and without expressing those things that concerned him or those internal concerns that he might have had to navigate at some time, the ability to suck those in and don't cry, don't whine, don't, you know, all those things and don't really express in anything that mirrored vulnerability in the domain of women. That is in this domain. So that's this separation that women are this way and men are this way. So strong in the sense of the socialization where I received was being hard and certainly growing up in certain places, people felt their experiences to survive. They had to be hard to not be taken advantage of or not be approached and not be punked out, all that type of stuff. And so being hard, being non-expressive, being physically strong, being a protector, being a provider, all those things are well too. But when it's taken to the extremes, I think that men can use in this sense of strong. And so now, as it evolves for me and many men, they can include that vulnerability. I don't think you have to take out, but it's almost like a both and instead of either or. Growing up, it was an either or. You either this or that. And if you outside that norm, you're going to be punished. And if you're inside that norm, you're going to be rewarded.
Welcome to the Strong Man Podcast with Dr. Rimka, one mom's quest to support her son through his rites of passage and becoming what I hope is a man of courage, resilience, and compassion in a world seemingly gone mad. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Rimka. Thank you for joining me again for another podcast of The Strong Man. Just one mom's journey trying to figure out how to help her boy become like the men she admires. And here's one of them today right before you. So for those of you watching, you're seeing Spencer Murray, and I'm going to hold up his book. He is a published author. Yeah, look at your face.
Look at you.
Right. Conspiracy of Silence, How Religion and Patriarchy Oppress Women by Spencer A. Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I brought that. So I since changed the glad you have that. Thank you.
You changed the subtitle? Yeah,
it's just a subtitle. It says Religious and Patriarchal Roots of Violence Towards Women. The same thing, okay. But I changed it a while ago, and it's the same
as that. A little bit better.
So, yeah, Religious and Patriarchal Roots. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So yeah. Spencer.
Yes.
We know each other in real life.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. He's my birthday brother from another mother. We have the same birthday. We're both from Detroit.
My sister.
Yes. That's right. So we have a lot in common. Yeah. And sometimes people say we're like the tail and the heads of the same coin.
Yeah.
From the things we say and think, but we aren't the same person.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of things that are different about us. And you have been a great gift to my life to know you, and a gift to that my son has had a chance to know you. I wish I actually had more of you around him, but you know, life is life. You are not a biological father, no. Right?
No.
And yet I'm going to ask you for kind of parenting advice,
sure.
But you were a
yeah.
boy,
yes.
And you are a man,
yes.
And you do know what this is like.
Yeah.
So the name is Strong Man.
Okay.
I'll ask you first. When I say that, and I think you're one of you, you are one to
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
What does that word mean to you, or that definition, or how would you describe that?
Yeah, let me.
A lot of weird
yeah.
projections and
yeah.
lenses on me saying this. Some
yeah.
people find that offensive. Actually, it's been really interesting.
I'm sure it has. You know, I'm glad you asked the question. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. It's an honor to be here. I'll say that first. So when I think of strong men, and certainly that. That concept has evolved for me over time. And that's part of my journey, I'm sure that we'll talk about in the podcast as well. But now, if you were to ask me now and someone say, what is a strong man? One of the first words I would think of too is vulnerability. the ability to be vulnerable. And that is certainly part of my story too. But as I do work with men, we kind of input that word and input that theme, because many men that I work with, including myself, did not have the ability to be vulnerable, didn't grow up with the ability to do that, and thought that that word vulnerability was just a bad word. And so anything that reflected vulnerability, they would suppress and push down, you know, and that talks about feelings, emotions, whatever that is, or their own self-care, even their own self-care and their ability to give voice to who they are at any given moment and what their needs are. And so I think that's all part of that vulnerability that has to do with self too. And I think many men, including myself again, were not taught that that was part of it. So strong man, as I learned it growing up, strong man was one who was strong physically, one who was could suck it up and man up without being vulnerable and without expressing those things that concerned him, or those internal concerns that he had, he might have had to navigate at some time, the ability to suck those in and don't cry, don't whine, don't, you know, all those things, and don't really express in anything that mirrored vulnerability. Well, vulnerability certainly was a sign to, I find now in my work with men, for the most part, not all men, right? I don't like using that word all or most, I say many. Had associated vulnerability or anything associated with that in the domain of women. That is in this domain. So that's this separation. The women are this way and men are this way. So strong in the sense of the socialization I received was being hard, right? Being hard, being, and certainly growing up in certain places. You know, people felt their experiences to survive, they had to be hard to not be taken advantage of, or not be, you know what I mean, not be approached, not be punked out, all that type of stuff, you know what I mean? And so being hard, being non-expressive, being physically strong, being a protector, being a provider, and all those things are well too. But when it's taken to there's extremes, I think that men can use in the sense of strong. And so now, as it evolves for me and many men, they can include that vulnerability. I don't think you have to take out the protector or provider, but it's almost like a both and instead of either or. Growing up, it was an either or. You either this or that. And if you outside that norm, you're going to be punished. And if you're inside that norm, you're going to be rewarded. Which continually reinforces, constantly just reinforces that the idea that you have to be hard and be strong. So that's my definition now, to include those things, but also include vulnerability, the ability to communicate and to collaborate, the ability to be honest, all those things now, I would include in my definition of being a strong man.
It's really interesting. Yeah. So yeah. It's beautiful, which is probably the closest definition to mine, right?
Yeah.
And people do have a tendency to want to exclude. Like if I say,
yeah,
I'm encouraging my son to be physically balanced,
yes,
right? Mentally balanced,
yes,
with strength, stable. I see it,
yes,
as stability from a,
right,
I'm a brain doctor, right? Neurologically, yes, I use the words emotional stability,
yes,
neurological stability, right?
Yes.
Because a stable brain leads to stable, yes, behavior.
Yes.
And as a woman, I don't like unstable men with unstable,
right,
behaviors around,
yes,
me. They are a,
yes,
threat to me.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, and they can be physically very strong, and that's even worse if he's insecure, unstable,
yes. Yes.
You know, erratic,
yes,
can't be trusted, has no integrity, doesn't have courage, right? Like those are the greatest threats. So my purpose in this is that as a woman, as a mother, it is in my best interest to have as many strong, stable men walking around the earth, because
that's right.
I know I'm safe with you. I know my son is safe with you, right?
That's right.
So, and there's that idea of hard, that, yeah, I grew up with the same thing. I know, so
yeah,
everybody's city and culture might be a little bit different.
Yeah.
We have it very hard in Detroit. That's
exactly.
That's a That is how that is, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's probably, I would wager to say it's stronger in the Black community, wouldn't you?
Yeah. What you mean, the hardness?
To be hard, yes.
Like, yeah, I think, I certainly think it shows up in different ways. I certainly can speak to growing up in Detroit in a majority Black community, majority Black schools. And I certainly think it can be, I think a lot of things have to do with that media and everything, but I think it might be more, yeah, more pronounced, you know, showing up in different ways. I think it might show up in different, you know, this thing shows up in different ways with white men and Black men. Now, in a, yeah, with Black men, I think, and I'm working with Black men, I see that, and I know you know this, and you know, I just love talking about this stuff. There's some existing trauma, right, in the Black experience as a Black man. And so I think as a way to hold on to manhood, right, as a way to embrace your self-worth, maybe sometimes in a world that didn't value you, right, then there's the extreme of wanting to hold on to that. I talk about sometimes with men and other people in these spaces, like in a, you know, what we've seen in the last years, what we know has been going on sometimes, we've certainly seen it more in these recent years, you know, encounters with, you know, with police or criminal justice system, you know what I mean? And so what you have sometimes is, and let's just put it in white and Black, and particularly just police, period. Because you can have someone who's in law enforcement who's Black, who just, you know, adopts a certain a way of being that all police do. But let's just say one person is trying to, might be trying to assert authority, and another person might be trying to hold on to their manhood. And so there's this can be combustible, you know what I mean? Combustible. And so, I was talking to a guy in class the other day, and he's a Latino brother. He's light in complexion, like me, which has brought some privilege as well. But he was talking about how he was stopped by the police, right? And he was saying how the police was asking him some questions. He had a bad day, and he was like questioning the officer, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to show you this, you know? And it became that. And we began talking about in certain situations, if he was a Black man or a young Black man, that can be seen as resisting. That can be seen as not following authority. You know what I mean? And so I think with the existing trauma, whether that comes up or not, I think there might be a sense of, yeah, a Black man walking around having to hold on to this hardness or having to hold on to his manhood. He might not define his hardness, hold on to that. And then you have popular media, you have videos, you have hip hop, you have all that is just added to the mystique of being hard. You know what I mean? You talked about the jail. We talked about the jail earlier, working guys in jail. And, you know, we talked about this in class yesterday, and the guys were those who had that experience of being incarcerated or had some run-ins with the criminal legal system, certainly agree that there was a, we somehow glorify, you know, guys glorify being shot, or guys glorify being incarcerated, you know, as a sense of, you know, manhood or pats on the back, you know what I mean? And so,
like a rite of passage.
Yeah, rite of passage, right, exactly. And so guys in that culture, in that community, of course, they're walking around, you know, trying to be hard. And what we know, and I know what you know, what we know is oftentimes it's masking something else, masking some insecurities, or masking some type of lack of self-worth that's underneath that. But you have to dig down deep to get that. But I certainly think in that culture that happens a lot, and men try to, what's that word, posture in front of one another. Because we haven't learned how to be disarming yet. We haven't learned how, we have to arm ourselves. If a new guy comes into the room, we have to, you know, many of us will posture just to, you know, before we let someone see who we really are and be intimate you know, with that, yeah, with that person, be vulnerable with that person. So yeah, it's definitely pronounced there, but I think in that culture, it would be, although I think that might show up differently in a boardroom, right? In a boardroom full of white men, that might show up differently. And that might not necessarily come off as control and hardness in the way you'll see in this other culture we talked about, but it might come off as some other control that comes off in other ways, in a boardroom, men silence women's voices oftentimes, you know, that happens too. Men try to up one another, or compete with one another as far as material gains or whatever that may be. So I think it shows up different. But in that community, there's no question. There's no question in that, I don't like to use labels. So I don't want to say hip hop culture. I don't want to say that. But I certainly think media has helped to glorify those images. Mm-hmm. And so young men try to, you know, the same thing you're talking about, the really purpose of what you're doing, you know, to show Ben and other men some good models that, you know, because without those models, you know, then they will, you know, many men do look at that media and all those images.
Something's got to fill the space.
Yeah, something's got to fill that space. Yeah. And Erica always says to me, she's a good person to talk to. Well, on her own strength, she's a good person to talk to. But when we talk about this, Erica says to me sometimes, every now and then, you're the first man I ever dated. She said that to me. You're the first man. And when she says it, I suppose she's talking about all of those qualities that we've talked about earlier, because on one sense, she would say, "Hey, Spence, you're a man's man, right? Whatever that means, and what the meaning that we associate with it." And she said, "You're the first man I ever dated." And I think what she means is one who's also learning to show all those other qualities we talked about, vulnerability, and that, and still be. Because at the same time, Doc, she says to me that, yeah, I do feel safe with you out on the street too. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I do feel safe if we go out and something happens. You know what I mean? So I don't want to throw away. And right. I don't think men want to throw away this protection, this ability to protect.
I don't either.
But I think it's an emotional thing. It's protection is not just physical. There's an emotional safety that you feel with someone too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Yeah, yeah. And certainly physical. You know, I mean,
it's hardwired.
That's the real.
It's hardwired in your DNA. There is a neurological realness to it. And so I want to honor that with men and boys. I'm like, look, you are built to protect and defend. So I want you to understand, you should know how to do that so you don't feel incompetent. So you don't feel weak. You don't feel afraid. Right. You should have the skill set.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to back up a little bit
because
I know you.
Yeah.
The listeners may not know, you know, they don't know who you are exactly. Yeah. So Erica is his wife, everybody.
Yes.
And why don't you share with them briefly your professional journey, right? Yeah. Because you've alluded to in class, in the prison, and then this. So tell them what you do and how you got here, because it's a beautiful story and it's, you know, it truly informs.
Yeah.
A unique perspective you have on this.
Yes. Well, I would say my career, once I went through school, you know, sometimes you can go through school and just be going through the most and still not know what you want to do, right? So when I finished school, I was actually working in business with, you know, aspirations or just really expectations that I had to go into sales. And I was with a big telecommunications company and everything, and went back to school. And I was leaving school in 92. I saw on TV, I was in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and saw that there were these academies starting in Detroit. And these academies that were starting were schools of choice at that time in Detroit. Schools of choice had not been a thing yet. And so there were these African-centered academies, you know, Paul Robeson Academy, Marcus Garvey Academy, Malcolm X Academy, and Mae Jemison Academy, all these academies were starting. And I saw an interview with this one man who was being, who's going to be principal of one of the schools. And they said they were starting the school specifically for young boys who were considered to be at risk at the time. And I watched this report as I was preparing weeks later to graduate and go back to Detroit, and decided right then I wanted to go into education. So when I got back, I met somebody who introduced me to the principal, and there started my career in 1992 as an elementary school teacher at Paul Robeson Academy, where I taught for 7 years. And so I walked straight into the classroom. I hadn't had any training, because in Detroit at the time, you could be a certain, the highest level substitute teacher. You can go in and be responsible for a class, but certainly you have to go back to school and get certified at the same time. So I already had a bachelor's, I already had a master's from Western. And so when I decided to become a teacher, I went back to school at Wayne State and got certified. And I taught first grade for 5 years. And the lovely thing about that, I just earlier today communicated with one of my first students on Facebook. I just commented, and we're still friends, who's got to be about 36 years old. She's got to be 35 and 36, which shows you know what I mean? She's got to be, you know what I mean? And I just commented on some congratulator or something that's going on, that was going on in her life. And so I taught first grade for 4 or 5 years there, moved up to fifth, sixth grade, seventh grade. Moving forward, as I was teaching, we began at Paul Robeson Academy a mentoring program called Man to Man. It was one of the biggest in the city, Man to Man mentoring program. And I was like co-chairman of that for a while. And that really got me interested in working with boys and mentoring boys, right? That's how that started. At the same time, I was also a minister, had become a minister around the same time in the 90s. And began doing work with men. And so, you know, and so that got me interested in boys and men. And certainly that was all driven by my own experiences of being a young man and growing and evolving and learning. And I remember that when we would mentor boys, and certainly when I would mentor boys at that age, fifth grade, sixth grade, and younger, you know, we taught them how to, you know, do things. Hey, shake hands, you know, shake hands, look a man in his eyes when you do that. All these things are good, right? How to be responsible, how to work together and create projects with other men. And so we kind of fit the void, particularly because a lot of the boys at our school came from single parent households. And so there was so many mothers bringing their boys to man, you know, for that particular reason. So we did that for years. And so what we taught them about that, but I also can reflect on, we didn't teach boys a lot about that vulnerability piece we talked about earlier. We talked about, hey, now we didn't teach them how to be hard, but we taught them how to be a man as what we knew at the time. And it was very effective, because many of the boys now who are in that school at Paul Robeson Academy, I've got lines of ones who will tell you that that experience for them was just amazing. Not just the mentoring program, but the school in which we taught about self-esteem and who you are, talking about I am somebody and all like that. So my career spanned 20 years. From that, I moved to Academy of the Americas in Southwest Detroit because I wanted a different experience. As you know, Detroit was very segregated at that time. So here you have a predominantly black school on the west side, and here you have the southwest side of Detroit. And when I grew up, many people weren't going to the southwest side of Detroit except to go to Social Micos and eat, you know what I mean, or you know, they and would come back to Detroit. And so it's interesting when I moved there, because there were people saying, why are you going to Southwest Detroit, you know?
Having good, healthy skin shouldn't cost a fortune. That's why I'm not having this crazy, outrageous prices that people are paying. I was so happy when I came across pomafera.com/Rimka, and I could offer something that was non-toxic, safe for babies to great grandma, and actually worked, and it doesn't break the bank. This is what I put on my skin every single morning and night. Go to pomifera.com/Rimka, pomifera.com/RIMKA, all made in the USA.
Our kids need you over here. We need strong models of a Black man. What was true, but I also wanted another experience too, because I met someone who told me about this other school, and I ended up doing summer school for them. And I moved to the Academy of the Americas, where it was predominantly a Latino school, of course, but many of my students were, the large majority of them were of Mexican descent, and then Puerto Rican, Dominican, and so forth. But I learned it just a whole new experience. So my 20 something years of teaching in Detroit was the foundation of my experience. And so I did that, moved here. And I think that all of my work, I kept turning all that work on myself. And I use the word all the time, interrogating myself to be who I want to be and grow and keep unfolding. And so I ended up in 2009, met Erica. In 2010, we got married. In 2011, we moved to Atlanta, and I left the school system. And all that was precipitated by being the primary caregiver for my mother, who passed in 2008, which was an amazing experience. I can't even tell you about that experience, but I think when I look back at it, the deep experience of being a caregiver for my mom and watching her take her last breath and being by her side brought another level of surrender and vulnerability in me as a person, I think. And so I was prepared to go even deeper. I moved here, got back in school at New York Theological Seminary, where our friend Naomi was my advisor. And I began writing. I began to look at my own behavior too, as a man, and where that came from. I always want to get to the roots, right, of where that came, where certain things came from. That's that Aquarian nature, one to just know everything, one to get to the roots, one to look at it, want to see how it shows up in this universe, how I can help change and all like that. So I began to look at my relationships, or relationships between men and women, basically heterosexual relationships at the time, because Erica being a life coach, when I met her, she was doing some of the same work. We came together, did relationship workshops. So that led me into doing a dissertation about the tension and the conflict between men and women in relationships and where that comes from. And since I was in a seminary school, I had to look at the religious and spiritual aspects of that too. And so I looked at how religion and patriarchy together might be a part that perpetrates violence onto women. And I began to do that, work with Men Stopping Violence. I'm going to fast forward real fast now.
Well, actually, pause with Men Stopping Violence. Because
yes.
That's a big part of what you do.
Yes, that's a big part. That's a big part of what
I do. This is. And again, I don't know if anything defines a strong man more than
So
what you've taken a stand on doing.
Yeah. Thank you. So when I was in school at New York Theological Seminary, and my advisors knew that I wanted to do work on, because you know what happened was people in Detroit, right, knew some of the work I did. They knew who I am. And I remember, I never forget the moment, someone sent me an article, an editorial article written by a sister, and it was talking about, It was critiquing a video that came out by Robin Thicke, and it was a video.
Yeah.
It was a video with women dancing around in the video, but there was also, which I didn't know at the time, an X-rated. There were two different videos, so one was kind of R-rated, one was kind of X-rated. So she sent me the article about, and it was talking about objectification and women's bodies and things like that. And so I watched the video, and It really got me to thinking about messages that we all receive about each other, period. Messages that men might receive about women. And that really took me into wanting to do this work when it came time to, because my course of study at New York Theological Seminary was conflict transformation. So the idea even before I decided I was going to do about relationships and men and women, conflict transformation is the study of how can we reduce tension and increase peace, whether it be in relationships among nations, among groups of people, to go into that tension and transform the party's intention in the tension, rather than, you know, people talk about conflict resolution. You know what I mean? We use that a lot in school. If two little boys are fighting, and, hey, you say you're sorry, you say you're sorry, whatever, you shake hands. Well, you haven't really resolved the issue. You just shook hands and maybe someone feels slighted. Maybe we don't have an agreement on both parties, but we think we resolved the conflict. Conflict transformation is really going into the tension and doing it in such a way where you try to transform both parties in the conflict. And so that was conflict transformation, which as soon as I heard of the course of study, I was like, yes, sign me up. So I just turned that into relationships and how that shows up in relationships. So that's how I ended up doing that. So my advisor, one of my advisors at the time, said, you should go check out Men Stopping Violence. And so I went and met them. And this was probably 2013, 14. I met them and I really wanted to do my dissertation and go there and collaborate with them to do the dissertation. And I could tell that they were like, well, they wanted me to go through this class too, the 24-week class, kind of get immersed in the work. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time I was just like, well, I don't really need that. You know, I really need that. I just want to do the dissertation, but I love their work. And so it just wasn't, just really wasn't a time for me to get immersed. And so I knew them for years. And as I finished the dissertation, as I did the book, as I kept growing, it just, Men Stopping Violence was always around. I knew of them, but I ended up going to their 3-day training. I was just moved to do that back in maybe 2019, something like that, 3-day training. Then I decided myself to go through the 24-week class, which all men have to go through who come to Men Stopping Violence. Every state has intervention program. Some call it BIP, Batterers Intervention Program. Some, Georgia calls it the Family Violence Intervention Program for men who are either self-referred, referred through lawyers, faith community, criminal legal system, that you have to go to this class. Georgia's program is 24 weeks. Different states have different requirements. California's 52 weeks. Anyway, I went through the class just as, I went through the class as a participant, not as one who wants to know. I had to sit there and talk about my worst incident of violence. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to sit there and talk about and really go into that and go through this whole transformative process. And so while I was finishing the class, an opportunity to work with them came up and I took it and I began working with them at the beginning of 2020. And so I became prevention coordinator, eventually director of prevention programs, and all the work I've done was in that area, which brought collaborations with all type of groups in Georgia, in a Women's Resource Center, Partnership Against Domestic Violence, all people who are in the work of domestic violence, intimate partner violence. So that's the work. And so I just transitioned into doing some contract work with them, coming off the staff, but it still is a large part. What I learned there, what I've gleaned from there is still a large part of what I do. Now I've even taken it further, continue to evolve, and it doesn't exclude everything I learned there. But now I really want to work with men, because what I found is that what I have found in the movement, period, in domestic violence, because certainly there's a need to serve survivors and have survivor programs and victims. And I use the word survivors more, you know, the programs to really serve and do everything you need to do for survivors of domestic violence and those who are in those situations now. What I'm evolving to and what I want to do also is humanize men in the process, because oftentimes there was this, there could be a feeling of if there's a man who has shown violence in any way, and remember on that spectrum, when now we're talking about emotional violence, psychological violence, all that is there, though most people and most men only identify it as physical. And that's why they say, you know, well, I'm not a violent man. I haven't hit anybody. I haven't done that. But there's a spectrum. And so, you know, I'm really moving to the point of becoming trauma informed and knowing that if we don't talk to young men and men about how to be stable, that word stability is coming up for me, be stable in here, you know, to be stable in here mentally, spiritually, all that, then oftentimes men, in the name of being hard, not expressing yourself, suppressing all the feelings and not expressing them, can numb those feelings in a number of different ways, by alcohol, by smoking, by drugs, by sex, by other addictions, to numb the tension. Because if men are taught they're not supposed to do that, then I'm not supposed to do that, but I have this tension inside. And so, you know, I either numb it or either try to escape from it, or, you know, or engage
or
in
explode,
some
or explode. Yeah, because the energy
that is it. That
I
is
like
it.
That. Tension's like shaking a bottle
or explode.
Usually it can't, and because
or explode. That's it.
People have been afraid, like mothers,
yes. Yes.
Women are afraid
yes.
of that tension and that
yes.
energy.
Yes.
We say,
yeah.
don't you, you know, push
yes.
it down, push it down.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm discovering as a
yeah.
mother trying to
yeah.
figure out, how do I
yeah.
acknowledge?
Yeah.
I get you got a lot of energy.
Yeah.
I get you got a lot of tension.
Yeah.
And it's a whole lot to ask a 12, 13,
yeah.
14,
yeah.
even a six-year-old
yeah.
boy.
Yeah.
A six-year-old boy exploding doesn't scare me.
Yeah.
Right. No mother's really
yes.
that afraid of that,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
You know, but 13, 14, 15, 16, you start getting a little afraid.
Come on.
Because they're big and they're loud, and it might be reminiscent of a man that did abuse that woman.
That's
her
right.
Her father, her brother,
right.
her uncle, her priest, her teacher, her husband, right?
That's right. That's exactly
so
right.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We often project, and we're pushing it down just from our own insecurities, our own inhealing. Yeah, like it's
yes.
a lot, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was a word
yeah.
someone used, was energy. You're using
yeah.
tension.
That's
it.
Yeah, very yeah same thing.
Same thing.
Yep.
And
I learned
to realize, I just, with my son, said it last night, and I ended up a
yeah.
little bit of tears and a
yeah.
little bit overwhelmed. And I had to go,
yeah.
I get it, honey.
Yeah.
You have a lot of energy right now.
Yeah.
You're angry. You're upset.
Yeah.
You should be.
Yes.
And I'm having a hard time with how loud this is.
Yeah.
And you know, like, so it's the
yes.
balance of how do I
it is.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't want to gaslight.
Yeah.
You should have this space.
That's right. That's right.
And it's hard for me though to hear all this. You
yes.
know?
Yes.
So it's a lot. So
yeah.
I'm learning to get better at it.
Yeah. I'm so
like,
proud. I'm
not
so
personal. Like that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It's not personal.
It's not personal.
It's not personal.
Personal. It's
even though
personal.
That energy is coming at me, it's affecting my system.
Exactly.
So I
exactly.
have to know, like, damn, that's
exactly.
a lot of energy.
Exactly.
And it's affecting my system.
Yeah.
But he's a child.
Yes.
He does. This is the best skill set he's got.
Yes.
I certainly, you know,
yeah.
a little bit of tears, a little bit of, say, baby, I'm good.
Yeah.
It's a
yeah.
lot of energy. And I got this, I move my energy through.
Yes.
Crying.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
A
yes.
Lot
yes.
More than you.
Yeah. Releasing. Yes.
Right? Like so as I have those conversations with him, like, hey, this is how I move my energy. This is how you're moving your energy.
Yes.
This is why sports are so important for you. This is why sometimes it's like stop and do 10 push-ups. Boo-boo.
That's right. That's right.
You know?
That's right. That's right. A push-up sports, martial arts, boxing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So let's talk
yeah.
about that. You're working
yeah.
with men mostly, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Got that. But like, any insider tips to be like, well, he already done hit the woman, or he already done
yeah.
psychological, like, okay, I'm
yeah.
trying to avoid that from even happening.
Yeah.
Like most of us
exactly.
want to avoid. And I think it's important for mothers, men, whoever's it,
yeah.
like to hear that message. Actually though, he's not an animal.
Yeah.
Like to work on humanizing and realize you can,
yeah.
I've made mistakes.
Yes.
I've had moments of violence that
yeah.
I shouldn't have done, right? I'm still a human.
Yes, me too.
I can recover and be like,
yeah.
oh yeah, I shouldn't have said that. Oh no,
yeah.
I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
That was, I lost control and
yeah.
because I was stuffing down
yeah.
or whatever was it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Looking at it now from the boys you've worked with and your more mature definition of what strength is and bringing it is vulnerability and emotional stability. You know, what are some things that you think boys today need to know? Boy, you know, it's a very different landscape. We didn't have smartphones, social media, and you and I growing up, you know, they are bombarded with stuff, and parents are overworked, underpaid, stressed out, not present, right? Like, I know it's an overwhelming task, but if there were some things you say, Stephanie, make sure anybody, mom's listening, you know, like this, there's this, because I think I want to point out, Spencer, I want my son, you know, to be with me like that.
I know.
Like I can't imagine that story, and I want to get into it, but it's like that strength. You didn't run away from the ugly, you know? You were there in the ugliness. Birth and death are the two dirtiest moments of our lives, and people are sanitizing them so much, and men are often not allowed there. And I think it's a travesty.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah,
they're not allowed. And that's why I say that experience transform. I'm so glad you asked me, and I don't mind talking about it. I don't mind crying and us getting into this.
Of course, I know that.
Let me say this too.
The balance of how do I make sure boys end up those kind of men that can be with their mother.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe changing her diapers and maybe getting her.
Oh,
you know,
no doubt.
You know what I mean?
I had to do it. Let me say too, I've known you and Bennett for a minute, and though we haven't seen each other in a while, you and I both are intuitive and see things. And I'm really so proud of you. And I say that from here, what you're doing with Ben, and I've heard both of your angst and your growing pains with that. And I just love, and I just wrote this down. I love how you said and instead of but. I love how you said and. And I know that's intentional for you. I know when you say, hey, Bennett, I know you're feeling this, and I'm having this reaction, not but, you know what I mean? Because but just negates everything he's feeling, you know, like, don't do this, but, you know, because all those things exist. And so I just applaud that. I am learning. Because most of my work is with men now, because it is such a different landscape. How to talk to boys. I mean, how to talk to young men, and the first thing that comes to mind is we have to, you know, we live in such a call out culture that we've forgotten how to call people in, that there's a way of inviting people into a space that's safe for them. Mm-hmm. So when I would go into the Cap County Jail, every time I go into Zabin Parodies and work with, you know, the quote unquote homeless, who I always tell them, hey, you're in transition, you know, but. And I say, you know what? I see you. And I look each one in the eyes as I look each one of those men in the circle, if it was 15 men, and repeat it 15 times, I see you, I see you, I see you, I see you, I see you. And that was a way of saying that you are somebody. And I will tell you, Stephanie, that in jail, that there would be all type of different men sitting around in this session I'm doing. Some would be in there for small drug offenses. Some would be in there for domestic violence. Mm-hmm. Some would be in there for murder. They were waiting for a trial. You know what I mean? And so I'm sitting there. And so I would have men come in and, you know, with, you know, body language, they would come in and they would be sitting like, you know, what is this? What is this guy? What is this, you know? Yeah. Who is this, you know, light skinned guy gonna save me? You know what I'm saying? This, you know, I'm saying all that stuff. What is this? What is this guy?
You can't help it that you're so pretty.
Hey, man, it's just stuff. Don't say this deal. You know what I mean? What is this guy? Yeah. So, and I'm gonna tell you, I would say, and I would just create the space and say, I see you. I see you. I see you. And do you know there would be some men who would automatically I would see the unfold their arms. I would see it in their expressions that mm-hmm. they just relax.
Physical transformation.
It was a physical transformation. Yeah. Just by saying, I see you. And I would say, I know you're in here and this guy and this guard has to sit here in the room while we're doing this. I know you're in your orange jumpsuit. I know you're in there, but I see you. And when I say I see you, I don't mean I see you as a prisoner. I see you as someone incarcerated. I see you as somebody who fucked up, who had to come to jail. I see you as a man and a person. I'm going to tell you that that opened up. It was a calling in. And so this is what I do with men. I'm coming full circle because I know you ask about, what do we do with these boys now? And
you're good.
So with the men, in class, right? Particularly when you have so many men who were referred to our program from the criminal legal system. And even though Men Stopping Violence is an educational company, not associated with that, if we get our referrals from there, men associate, I have to come to this program. This is a part of my punishment, right? Mm-hmm. And so I have to come to this 24-week program and sit here. And so it's important that I present this class not as a punitive measure. If the idea of the class is to hold you accountable for whatever behaviors or words, accountability is an act of love and concern. It's not an act of punishment. And so it's up to me to not make this class about punitive, that you're bad, you're a bad man. We separate bad men from good men and you're this and me here to punish you and do all this. It's important that I set up, even in the interview, when I interview guys to come in, that I set that up and they come in and they're open and ready to learn. And I rarely have met a man who's not ready to take accountability, real accountability, if you approach him that way. I rarely have met a man. I mean, there's some, of course, and you're right, there's some men who just going to be sadistic and do what they do. But the majority of men I meet are wanting to grow, but I also have to get them to see how some external messages that you weren't born violent, you weren't born with the propensity for violence, that much of this was socialized upon you from the day you were born about how you were supposed to be and how you were supposed to move in the world. And if we know it was externally imposed, then what was learned can be unlearned. Then we can start seeing and removing those things and seeing how those messages have indoctrinated us, especially if, I'm 57 years old. If I got this message for 45, 50 years, it's going to take some undoing, some time to undo some of that stuff. And so I can only model what you said and talk about what you modeled with Bennett, that you acknowledge his pain, acknowledge his maybe moment of confusion, a moment of tension, but also expressed yours. And I am in the process of creating some spaces, so I told you about the work I'm doing. I'm also got off the phone today and yesterday. I'm also creating a nonprofit where that's going to have spaces for, it could be trauma-informed spaces, but have spaces of men who are this. Right now, what I do is most of my work is with men. Yesterday, I just told someone, "Hey, I'll talk to your son if you want him." They were in New Jersey, just dealing with some stuff, But I think mothers can, in the effort to really understand, and I think with you, Stephanie, you have made it intentional to understand what's going on in Bennett. But if someone doesn't, some mother might be, where the hell is this coming from? What is my son so upset about? What is he dealing with? And I think it's important for women to understand and read everything they can and about boys' development, understand all those messages too, because in the absence of that, they won't know. And what I have found is that whether you want to call them patriarchal messages or messages of unhealthy masculinity, all that, that all of us can buy into that, men and women can buy into that. And mm-hmm. so just as a mother who might, if a young boy comes in at 6 years old, right, outside, and all the adults are in the house, you know, gather with the families outside playing with the kids. And, you know, young boy comes in crying, you know, he might have skinned his knee. He might have had an altercation with someone, some of his friends, who knows? He comes in crying, you know, while the message, and the same message I got from my parents, Stephanie, I mean, and I know that their intention wasn't to do this. Their intention was to try to make it safe for me, to try to make it so I can operate in a world that might be hostile to me, particularly as a Black man, you know. But if those parents say, if that someone says to a young boy, hey, stop crying, stop that crying, suck it up, stop the crying. Or if they give him what we learned in Eric and I learned in grief counseling, because we did have a stillborn in 2012, Christian Alexander Murray. Our son was stillborn. March 28th, he would be 10 years old. I still consider him still with us. But if someone, and so we learned about these short-term energy releasing behaviors, you already know about it. People just call it different things. But if you tell that young boy, hey, stop crying, you know, stop the crying, sucker, I want you to be mama's big boy. And I've heard that. Yeah. Being an elementary teacher, I've heard those exact words say to young boys. Or you might give that child a cookie or something, right? And so, you know, they might forget about their pain temporarily because they're enjoying that cookie, but as really hasn't gotten to the root of the issue. And the message can be interpreted by a young boy who doesn't have the capacity to really navigate that message, understand what it means. It can send a message that it's not okay to cry. It's not okay to express myself. You know, it could send the message that, hey, food, shopping, something else can be a short-term energy releasing behavior.
iPad. Play a video.
There you go. And hey, we ain't got no shortage of those right now. We ain't got no shortage. Because, you know, back in the show, and I grew up, man, I remember when my dad bought the first Atari video game, and it was table 10. Yes. It was like,
It was the best, man. That was when I was 12 or 13.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And so, but yeah, I can't even imagine the availability of short-term energy releasing behaviors to just, you know, not get to the. So I think understanding that development, understanding what boys face, and being with some men who understand that too. And so that's why I'm really blessed to be a part of your village.
It's studying, right? It's a little bit of, hey, what, as somebody, a therapist I interviewed, they need to know the developmental stages.
Like, yes.
Understand what's normal.
Yes.
And I had to learn, they lie. Like normal. Luckily, so many of my friends are in education. Yeah. Like, oh, girl, that's what they do in sixth grade. They lie. Yeah. I was like, oh. That's right. they're not bad, that's part of growing up, that's true. I did do a lot of that too,
right? Yeah, I did a lot of it too. Man, like, it might have showed
it. I sure did.
And you know, Stephanie, I didn't, when you talk about reading that literature, listen, I did my transformation while I was doing a lot of work with men and boys and everything. But my total transformation, which is still happening, but really a pivot didn't come until I started reading feminist literature. I started reading about women's experiences. I started reading about what they have been saying.
Yeah.
Man, my eyes were like, wow. You know what I mean? Because, you know, and this is what you do with Bennett, and this is what mothers have to, we all have to do with our children, you know, because there is a danger when we deny each other's lived experiences.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know. I would have said, if you had asked me 20 years ago about violence against women, I 25 years ago and beyond, I'm not one of those, man. That's not my, that's that's not my issue. You know, that's a woman's issue. When men are the majority of perpetrators, right? That's a man's issue. You know what I mean? And so I just wouldn't have known. And yet, I was perpetrating some bad emotional violence.
Right.
I was.
Yeah.
That's part of my worst. I was. And unknowingly. Now, people have their own journeys, you can say that, but I know that my ability, my tendency to emotionally withhold and shut down my emotions, because that's what I was taught a man was, was violent, was abusive. It was abusive is what it was. And so when I had to face that, and face that and be like, hey, you know what? I was too. And if anyone reads the forward in the book, Erica will tell you that there was a moment when I sat on the side of the bed and she was on the other side and I was crying when this realization came to me, and I apologized to her. I apologized not for what I had done to her. I apologized because I was coming to a realization of how I had been growing up. And so, and I knew that she had faced some of that same type of stuff in her prior relationships. So I wasn't apologizing for men who she'd been with and saying I'm better than them. I was just apologizing on behalf of everybody, saying it symbolically almost, like, wow, I didn't know. I didn't know that, and no one could have told me that 25, 30 years ago since I started dating it. No one could have told me that that I was, you know, I'm always been a nice guy. I've always been a guy that people look to, you know, but didn't know that. And so,
yeah. A lot of that's an interesting message as a parent, which actually is important because mothers in particular feel overly responsible and very prone to guilt.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard where I'm like, oh, everything's, you know, my fault or my responsibility.
Yeah.
Hearing that actually in a way, I'm like, right. Like, let yourself off the hook a little
bit. Yes, let yourself
Stephanie, off. Every mother, every parent,
You
had to go through your own journey and nobody told you that at 5 or 6 or 13. Like, that transformation, there had to be some kind of pain and some kind of disruption so you could remember that self in a new way and have a new learning. So
that's right.
Which I have to always, as a parent, go through, like, oh, right, he's his own soul, it's his own journey. As much so hard
it is,
you know, to be like, okay, I cannot protect. I see that hole in the road. Is he just really gonna walk right into it? Like, you fell. You saw. You didn't see it. I told you. You know what I mean? Like, it's this balance of I want to do the best. I want to encourage, and I also have to let it go and let
you have to let it go. That's got to be the hardest thing, Stephanie. That's got to be gut-wrenching. Now, you know, I had to talk to parents.
How much control? I don't really have that.
You don't really have control. You know,
I had what I had.
No.
And once they kind of leave the nest and they're in this in-between space, then it's his journey and how he's taking it in. So it's an in-between. It's an interesting space for
people. It is.
Yes,
it is.
We have responsibility. Yes, we got to do the best. How do we, you know, learn about what they need, learn about what we need, care for them, care for ourselves.
That's right.
And all that. You know, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
You know this. So, Stephanie, I wrote it down because I really had to say it in the moment. My mother, we were together going back and forth to appointments when she, you know, was diagnosed with stage 4 and had cancer and stuff. And we were in the car one day. We had just come out of the grocery store, south near South Evergreen and Levenmile, I'll never forget. And we got into the car and I turned on the radio and the song came on by Regina Bell. It was called If I Could. Mm-hmm. And she said, I want you to play this at my funeral. And I really just found out she had stage 4. And so I didn't want to, you know, think about funeral or that. And so I turned the station. And, but I would encourage you, man, what you just said made me think of that song. And that she says words like, if I could, you know, I would tell you about that hole in the street, but I can't live your life for you. If I could, I would do that. And it goes on and on and on about if I could, but but I can't. And it's such a wonderful song. And she wanted that played at her funeral for her two sons, you know? And as when I fast forward planning the funeral, and I gave him the CD for the song. And this what I'm saying now would probably be another hour's worth of podcast that we can do later, because that was my issue with religion. They didn't play it. And they didn't play the song. And this is a church she had been at for 60 years, gave her blood, sweat, and tears, and money. And they didn't play the song because they said it was a secular song. It wasn't a religious song. So they didn't play it, which further broke my heart and really adds to my whole critique of religion and dogma and things like that, you know. So but it is a wonderful song. And I've also think about that poem, and it applies to mothers and sons too, that Bennett came through you, but not from you. That Khalil Gibran, you know, that poem, yeah. that is true. And I can't imagine, when I think about Christian, who would be 10 years old, I can't imagine, man, I can't even imagine that journey, that transformative journey would take as a parent to live that out. You know, it's one thing to say it, but then you're living it out. So, and you're transforming in the process, which I know. So,
yeah,
that's a hell of a thing.
That's for sure. Wow, well, yeah. That's a beautiful place to kind of end.
Oh, man, you know?
I was like welling up as you said it. I wasn't expecting to hear they didn't play it. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. But
that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I did a whole nother.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there's any extra thing for you to say. I think.
No, that's it. I mean, I'm back anytime you want me. And not only that, I just, I'm grateful to be part of your village. And when you call, I'll say yes. When you call, I'll say yes. And
we got to get together.
We will. Yeah, I know. We used to do that before. We used to do that before COVID.
I know. We used to do all kinds of things. Thanksgiving at my house. I fed you and played football.
I know. We played football.
Yeah.
We met somewhere. I forgot that one of the last places we went was in downtown Decatur.
Farm Burger
sure was, man. That was so good.
I know.
That was so good. I love you, Stephanie.
Thank you, everybody. His book and everything, all his information, and get out in contact with him, because some people might professionally want to reach out to you.
Yes.
There might be some men's and boys organizations that could use your support.
Sure.
And we'll have all that in the show notes for everybody.
Okay, and I'll give you you got my email address. You got it.
Yep. I got it all. We'll get it all. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Today's guest is my friend, Dr. Spencer Murray. Spencer is an educator and minister with over 25 years of teaching experience in Detroit. Spencer is committed to working with men in his mission to identify the cultural elements of toxic masculinity and offer healing alternatives to create an environment that is demonstrated by a healthy respect for women and a reverence for the feminine energy throughout the world. He lives in Atlanta, Georgia with his wife, Erica. And he and I actually share the same birthday. So he's kind of like a brother from another mother. Enjoy.